Chapter 55. Before the ring formed round the old L shaft was broken, one figure had disappeared from within it. Mr. Bounderby and his shadow had not stood near Louia, who held her father's arm, but in a retired place by themselves. When Mr. Gradgrind was summoned to the couch, Sissy, attentive to all that happened, slipped behind that wicked shadow a sight in the horror of his face, if there had been eyes there for any sight, but one, and whispered in his ear. Without turning his head, he conferred with her a few moments, and vanished. Thus the whelp had gone out of the circle before the people moved. When the father reached home, he sent a message to Mr. Bounderby's, desiring his son to come to him directly. The reply was, that Mr. Bounderby, having missed him in the crowd, and seeing nothing of him since, had supposed him to be at Stone Lodge. "I believe, father," said Louia, "he will not come back to town tonight." Mr. Gradgrind turned away, and said no more. In the morning, he went down to the bank himself, as soon as it was opened, and seeing his son's place empty, he had not the courage to look in at first, went back along the street, to meet Mr. Bounderby on his way there, to whom he said that, for reasons he would soon explain, but entreated not then to be asked for, he had found it necessary to employ his son at a distance for a little while. Also, that he was charged with the duty of vindicating Stephen Blackpool's memory, and declaring the thief. Mr. Bounderby, quite confounded, stood stock still in the street after his father-in-law had left him, swelling like an immense soap bubble, without its beauty. Mr. Gradgrind went home, locked himself in his room, and kept it all that day. When Sissy and Louia tapped at his door, he said, without opening it, "Not now, my dears, in the evening." On their return in the evening, he said, "I am not able yet tomorrow." He ate nothing all day, and had no candle after dark, and they heard him walking to and fro late at night. But, in the morning he appeared at breakfast at the usual hour, and took his usual place at the table. Aged and bent he looked, and quite bowed down, and yet he looked a wiser man, and a better man, than in the days when in this life he wanted nothing but facts. Before he left the room, he appointed a time for them to come to him, and so, with his gray head drooping, went away. "Dear father," said Louia, when they kept their appointment, "you have three young children left. They will be different, I will be different yet, with heaven's help." She gave her hand to Sissy, as if she meant with her help to. "Your wretched brother," said Mr. Gradgrind. "Do you think he had planned this robbery when he went with you to the lodging?" "I fear so, father. I know he had wanted money very much, and had spent a great deal." The poor man being about to leave the town, it came into his evil brain to cast suspicion on him. I think it must have flashed upon him while he sat there, father, for I asked him to go there with me. The visit did not originate with him. He had some conversation with the poor man. Did he take him aside? He took him out of the room. I asked him afterwards why he had done so, and he made a plausible excuse. But since last night, father, and when I remember the circumstances by its light, I am afraid I can imagine too truly what passed between them. Let me know," said her father, "if your thoughts present your guilty brother in the same dark view as mine." "I fear, father," hesitated Louia, "that he must have made some representation to Stephen Blackpool, perhaps in my name, perhaps in his own, which induced him to do in good faith and honesty what he had never done before, and to wait about the bank those two or three nights before he left the town." "Too plain." Returned the father. "Too plain." He shaded his face, and remained silent for some moments. Recovering himself, he said, "And now, how is he to be found? How is he to be saved from justice? and the few hours that I can possibly allow to elapse before I publish the truth, how is he to be found by us, and only by us? £10,000 could not affect it. Apostrophe, Sissy has affected it, father. Apostrophe, he raised his eyes to where she stood, like a good fairy in his house, and said in a tone of softened gratitude and grateful kindness, it is always you, my child. Apostrophe, apostrophe, we had our fears, apostrophe, Sissy explained, glancing at Louia, before yesterday. And when I saw you brought to the side of the litter last night, and heard what passed, being close to Rachel all the time, I went to him when no one saw, and said to him, don't look at me. See where your father is. Escape at once, for his sake and your own. He was in a tremble, before I whispered to him, and he started and trembled more then, and said, where can I go? I have very little money, and I don't know who will hide me. I thought of father's old circus. I have not forgotten where Mr. Sleary goes at this time of year, and I read of him in a paper only the other day. I told him to hurry there, and tell his name, and ask Mr. Sleary to hide him till I came. I'll get to him before the morning, he said. And I saw him shrink away among the people. Apostrophe, thank heaven. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed his father. He may be got abroad yet. Apostrophe, it was the more hopeful as the town to which Sissy had directed him was within 3 hours' journey of Liverpool, whence he could be swiftly dispatched to any part of the world. But, caution being necessary in communicating with him, for there was a greater danger every moment of his being suspected now, and nobody could be sure at heart, but that Mr. Bounderby himself, in a bullying vein of public zeal, might play a Roman part, it was consented that Sissy and Louia should repair to the place in question, by a circuitous course, alone, and that the unhappy father, setting forth in an opposite direction, should get round to the same bourne by another and wider route. It was further agreed that he should not present himself to Mr. Sleary, lest his intentions should be mistrusted, or the intelligence of his arrival should cause his son to take flight anew, but that the communication should be left to Sissy and Louia to open, and that they should inform the cause of so much misery and disgrace, of his father's being at hand, and of the purpose for which they had come. When these arrangements had been well considered, and were fully understood by all three, it was time to begin to carry them into execution. Early in the afternoon, Mr. Gradgrind walked direct from his own house into the country, to be taken upon the line by which he was to travel, and at night the remaining two set forth upon their different course, encouraged by not seeing any face they knew. The two traveled all night, except when they were left, for odd numbers of minutes, at branch places, up illimitable flights of steps, or down wells, which was the only variety of those branches, and, early in the morning, were turned out on a swamp, a mile or two from the town they sought. From this dismal spot they were rescued by a savage old postillion, who happened to be up early, kicking a horse in a fly, and so were smuggled into the town by all the back lanes where the pigs lived, which, although not a magnificent, or even savory approach, was, as is usual in such cases, the legitimate highway. The first thing they saw on entering the town was the skeleton of Sleary's circus. The company had departed for another town more than 20 miles off, and had opened there last night. The connection between the two places was by a hilly turnpike road, and the traveling on that road was very slow. Though they took but a hasty breakfast, and no rest which it would have been in vain to seek under such anxious circumstances, it was noon before they began to find the bills of Sleary's horse riding on barns and walls, and 1 o'clock when they stopped in the marketplace. A grand morning performance by the riders, commencing at that very hour, was in course of announcement by the bellman as they set their feet upon the stones of the street. Sissy recommended that, to avoid making inquiries and attracting attention in the town, they should present themselves to pay at the door. If Mr. Sleary were taking the money, he would be sure to know her, and would proceed with discretion. If he were not, he would be sure to see them inside, and, knowing what he had done with the fugitive, would proceed with discretion still. Therefore, they repaired, with fluttering hearts, to the well-remembered booth. The flag with the inscription Sleary's horse riding was there, and the Gothic niche was there, but Mr. Sleary was not there. Master Kidderminster, grown too maturely turfy to be received by the wildest credulity as Cupid any more, had yielded to the invincible force of circumstances and his beard, and, in the capacity of a man who made himself generally useful, presided on this occasion over the exchequer, having also a drum in reserve, on which to expend his leisure moments and superfluous forces. In the extreme sharpness of his lookout for base coin, Mr. Kidderminster, as at present situated, never saw anything but money, so Sissy passed him unrecognized, and they went in. The Emperor of Japan, on a steady old white horse stenciled with black spots, was twirling five wash-hand basins at once, as it is the favorite recreation of that monarch to do. Sissy, though well acquainted with his royal line, had no personal knowledge of the present emperor, and his reign was peaceful. Miss Josephine Sleary, in her celebrated graceful equestrian Tyrolean flower act, was then announced by a new clown who humorously said cauliflower act, and Mr. Sleary appeared, leading her in. Mr. Sleary had only made one cut at the clown with his long whiplash, and the clown had only said, "If you do it again, I'll throw the horse at you." Apostrophe, apostrophe, when Sissy was recognized both by father and daughter. But they got through the act with great self-possession, and Mr. Sleary, saving for the first instant, conveyed no more expression into his locomotive eye than into his fixed one. The performance seemed a little long to Sissy and Louia, particularly when it stopped to afford the clown an opportunity of telling Mr. Sleary who said indeed, sir, apostrophe apostrophe to all his observations in the calmest way, and with his eye on the house, about two legs sitting on three legs looking at one leg, when in came four legs, and laid hold of one leg, and up got two legs, caught hold of three legs, and threw em at four legs, who ran away with one leg. For, although an ingenious allegory relating to a butcher, a three-legged stool, a dog, and a leg of mutton, this narrative consumed time, and they were in great suspense. At last, however, little fair-haired Josephine made her curtsy amid great applause, and the clown, left alone in the ring, had just warmed himself, and said, "Now I'll have a turn." Apostrophe, apostrophe, when Sissy was touched on the shoulder, and beckoned out. She took Louia with her, and they were received by Mr. Sleary in a very little private apartment, with canvas sides, a grass floor, and a wooden ceiling all aslant, on which the box company stamped their approbation, as if they were coming through. Cecilia, apostrophe, said Mr. Sleary, who had brandy and water at hand, "It doth me good to you. You was al with a favorite with Uth, and you've done Uth credit since the old time as I'm sure. You muth to our people, my dear, afore we speak of business, or they'll break their hearts, especially the women. Harris Jothman hath been, and got married to E.W.B. Childers, and he hath got a boy, and though he's only 3 years old, he sticks onto any pony you can bring against him. He's named the little wonder of scholastic equitation, and if you don't hear of that boy at Athlaith, you'll hear of him at Paris. And you recollect Kidderminster, that was thought to be rather sweet upon the earthself? Well, he's married a widder, old enough to be his mother. He was tightrope, he was, and now sees nothing on account of that. They've got two children, so we're strong in the fairy business and the nursery dodge. If he was to be our children in the wood, with their father and mother both a dying on a whore, their uncle a receiving of a mass his warts, upon a whore themselves both a going a blackberrying on a whore, and the robins a coming in to cover em with leaves, upon a whore you'd say it was the completest thing as ever you set your eyes on. And you remember Emma Gordon, my dear, as was Emma's day mother to you? Of course you do, I needn't ask. Well, Emma, he lost her youth band. He was throwed a heavy backfall off a elephant in a sort of a pagoda thing at the Sultan of the Indies, and he never got the better of it. And he married a second time, married a cheesemonger, as fell in love with her from the front, and essay overseer and making a fortune. Apostrophe, these various changes, Mr. Sleary, very short of breath now, related with great heartiness, and with a wonderful kind of innocence, considering what a bleary and brandy and watery old veteran he was. Afterwards he brought in Josephine, and E. W. B. Childers, rather deeply lined in the jaws by daylight, and the little wonder of scholastic equitation, and in a word, all the company. Amazing creatures they were in Louis's eyes, so white and pink of complexion, so scant of dress, and so demonstrative of leg. But it was very agreeable to see them crowding about Sissy, and very natural in Sissy, to be unable to refrain from tears. There. Now Cecilia has kissed all the children, and hugged all the women, and taken hands all round with all the men, clear, every one of you, and ring in the band for the second part. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as soon as they were gone, he continued in a low tone. Now, Cecilia, I don't ask to know any secrets, but I suppose I may consider this to be Miss Squire. Apostrophe, this is his sister. Yes. Apostrophe, and Toteron's daughter. That what I mean. Hope I you well, miss. And I hope the squireth well. Apostrophe, my father will be here soon. Apostrophe, said Louia, anxious to bring him to the point. Is my brother safe? Apostrophe, safe and sound. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he replied. I want you just to take a peep at the ring, miss, through here. Cecilia, you know the dodges. Find a spy hole for yourself. Apostrophe, they each looked through a chink in the boards. Sat Jack the giant killer piece of comic infant business, apostrophe, said Sleary. Sereth a property house, you see, for Jack to hide in. Sereth my clown with a saucepan lid and a spit, for Jack's servant. Sereth little Jack himself in a splendid suit of armor. Sereth two comic black servants twice as big as the house, to stand by it, and to bring it in and clear it, and the giant a very expensive basket one, he and on yet. Now, do you see them all? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, apostrophe, they both said. Look at them again, apostrophe, said Sleary, look at them well. You see them all? Very good. Now, miss, apostrophe, he put a form for them to sit on. I have my opinions, and the squire your father has his. I don't want to know what your brother's been up to. It's better for me not to know. All I say is, the squire has stood by Cecilia, and I'll stand by the squire. Your brother is one of them black servants. Apostrophe, Louis uttered an exclamation, partly of distress, partly of satisfaction. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.